I think that's how I used to do it. 808 and Ankle Breaks, episode 52. It's a hip hop and basketball based podcast. The final season.
Oof. Don't say that.
Our final semester. Here I am, editor in chief of the Amherst Wire, Jonathan Kerma. With me is my co-host, managing editor of the Amherst Wire.
What's up, y'all? You know what time it is. It's about to be that time. It's Trevor Wilson, managing editor for the Amherst Wire. And we're out here for episode 52. We are back after a long break.
Let's get it. Energy all season long.
All season long. This is it. We're going out with a bang.
Let's get it. So for those that are new here, we're going to hit you with the typical format. You know, we're going to hit you with the slap or skip to kick things off, where we're talking about the hottest singles. Well, this isn't of the week.
This is like the past couple weeks.
Yeah, you know, we've been MIA for a while. You know, we've been vacationing. We've been whining and dining. We've been living it up. So we're trying to catch up on some hip hop. And later in the show, or after slap or skip, we'll give you our picks of the week in terms of, you know, music that we've been listening to, new or old. And then we'll have a brief discussion on Roddy Ricch and making white pop stars angry. And then we'll talk a little bit of basketball, and then we'll be out of your ears. So let's do it, Trev.
Let's kick it off.
First slap or skip of 2020.
Oh, man.
To kick things off, you know we got to hit you with that Future. You know we got to. Future featuring Drake. Life is good. The song came out with a music video pairing with it, which was just hilarious.
Hilarious music video.
You're watching Drake and Future do, you know, jobs that rappers don't do. So it was just entertaining. But what do you think of the song itself, Trevor?
So the song itself, I'm actually going to go ahead and skip it. I just wasn't feeling this one. I feel like they kind of just took two different tracks and copy and pasted them together. I didn't find any bit of Drake's verse very catchy to me, or very just entertaining, I guess is the right word. Future's verse I liked a lot more, kicked it up a notch, but nothing really out of brand for them. I think it's very much like on character for them, the music that they're making here. So it's all right, just not a track I'm going to keep coming back to, so I'm going to skip it.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to give this one a slap. I was very intrigued by the format. The idea of pretty much, as you said, you know, taking two separate, it's almost like two separate songs that they just put together. There's two separate hooks here. Drake has a hook. Future has a hook. And I think they're both kind of like in their element. Like, you know, Drake, in the first half of the song, Drake, who's the ultimate, you know, chameleon when it comes to music, he's like, he somehow tricks it into seeming like he's the underdog now, you know, with lyrics like working on the weekend like usual. Anyone that, you know, works, you know, middle class and below, you know, you're probably working on the weekend, you know, whether it's retail, fast food, like they portray in the music video. Somehow with lyrics like working on the weekend like usual, it's caught me slipping once, okay, so what? It somehow makes Drake come off as the underdog. And then I think Future's half, where it's almost like a jolt back to life, where, you know, after you're working all day with the Drake side of things, Future comes in with the turn-up music, the party lifestyle. So I'm going to give it a slap.
That's the way I didn't look at it when I was listening to it. I like that.
I think there's just a concept behind it in a way. Like, I will admit, you know, there's nothing necessarily new from Drake and Future here, but it seems like a song for the underdog to be able to say, you know, life is good. You know, you're working hard during the day. You can party at night. That's the way I took it, at least. Right. Next, we got Megan Thee Stallion with her latest track, B-I-T-C-H. What do you think of this one, Trevor?
You know, I think I'm going to still give this a skip. The hook is just too overbearing for me. Like, yeah, it's catchy. It's going to stick in your head for a while, but it's almost catchy to a point where it gets a little bit obnoxious. But I will say there's a lot of positives about this track too. I think her flow on it in both of her verses is really well. She bounces very well over the beat. The beat's very bright, a little bit poppy, which is, you know, not too bad. It's a little crossover. But very uplifting, very up-tempo song. It's just not for me. I just couldn't get into it. I felt like it was dragging on a little bit towards the end, especially with the length of the hook. So I'm going to skip it.
Yeah, I'm also going to skip this track. I think Megan Thee Stallion's, you know, one of her biggest strengths, and, you know, her previous hits, Cash It, Hot Girl Summer, and Big Ol' Freak, is, you know, her energy and, you know, these strong, steady flows with lyrics that are both, like, provocative and liberating at the same time. This track is pretty much like it's a breakup song with a little bit of feminine empowerment as well. But I just think it's really the execution of the track that really falls short. I think the hook is very clunky, in my opinion. Megan Thee Stallion spells out with, you know, B-I-C-C-H. And it just kind of it just feels like it's clunky and kind of drags on where it's, it's not really something that. Well, Trevor says it's catchy. It's not something that I'm going to be singing.
Yeah.
But I'll also admit this song isn't for me in terms of, you know, it being a breakup type track from the perspective of the woman. You know, it's not really for guys like us to enjoy. I don't think that's the purpose of it. Mm. So I'll admit that. But I just think there could have been, you know, more like there aren't a whole lot of lyrics that really stand out. Like, you know, the only lyric that I wrote down when I was reading over everything was, you know, I ain't perfect and I try and fix the shit that ain't working, but it's 2020. I ain't finna argue about twerking, which I thought was it was funny and very on brand. So I enjoyed that line. But overall, it just seems like it doesn't deviate from, I guess, the standard of a breakup type song like this for me to really enjoy it.
I feel it's like a song that feels like it's been done before.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, 100%. And our last track, we're going to keep Slap or Skip brief this year, just so we can have time for the picks and then get into the discussions. So we're only going to do three tracks today. The last track, Jack Harlow, What's Poppin'. He's a Illinois rapper signed to Atlanta Records who's been slowly, you know, building a following since 2018. What do you think of this track, Trevor?
You know, I like this track. I think I'm going to give it a slap. I don't really know much about Jack Harlow. I only know him through one of our writers, actually, who he wrote about him kind of frequently. And, you know, this track's a lot of fun. The instrumental is very upbeat, very energetic. He comes in with a really, I don't want to say intense, but kind of a loose flow. Like, it feels like he's just having a lot of fun on this track.
Yeah, very laid back.
Yeah, he's just letting the bars rattle off. He's having a good time. It's a fun track. It's infectious. I'll say that. It's a slap for me.
I'm going to also give this a slap. I'm going to start by saying that Jack Harlow is like what G-Eazy probably thinks he sounds like in terms of, you know, a white rapper that's, you know, cool, laid back. And you know, it seems like the race doesn't matter. You know, with someone like Eminem, he thrives off being a white rapper, if that makes sense. With Jack Harlow, it's the race doesn't really matter. I'm still going to bring up the fact that he's a white rapper. I'm sorry. I just can't help it. Like, I'm just going to bring that up. But overall, this track, the delivery, as we said, very laid back, cool. I love the flow on this track.
Yes.
It's not really, I wouldn't say it's a triplet flow, but it's like triplet adjacent. Like, it's definitely got some triplet inspiration.
Yeah, and I feel like he switches it up enough throughout where it keeps you interested, you know?
In terms of, you know, concepts, there's nothing really here. It's kind of just more of like a let me flex. You know, I've kind of made a bigger name for myself, so let me flex about it. While also keeping it fun. So lyrics like spending money at the club like Sam's. I thought that was pretty funny. And then a Kim Possible reference with dark hair, bitch, and she look like she go, she do. I love that line. While there's also, you know, lines where he addresses, you know, the resentment of his success from people around him, including his friends. And I thought that was very interesting. I should also mention that the beat is produced by Jetson Made and Pooh Beats, the same guys that did Suge for DaBaby. And the beat is so
crazy.
So good. It's got this plucky piano melody going that's just
very
tough,
very
tough.
Simple, but it's
very
so
simple.
Hard. Yeah.
It's very tough when you combine it with Jack Harlow's flow. So I'm looking forward to listening to some more Jack Harlow.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go as far as to say he's the best white rapper alive. Hey, but I would rather listen to his album than an Eminem album in 2020.
Facts.
That's all I'm gonna say. but let's move on to our picks of the week, Trevor. So we're gonna do one album, one song, new or old, for both of them that we have just been, you know, listening to recently and we want to put you onto. So you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll kick it off. So on the album side of things, I think it goes without saying, I feel like everybody in the world has been listening to this album lately. But my pick of the week is going to be the Mac Miller album, Circles.
Okay.
I've been having that album on repeat. And to me, it is just such a beautiful send-off, I guess, for Mac Miller. And I was reading a Pitchfork review about it, and they said it was like a glimpse, like an uplifting glimpse of like an aspirational artist. And like, I don't know, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because I felt like Mac Miller, yes, he was aspirational. Like, yes, he had things maybe that he wanted to do with music, more things that he wanted to do with music. But I think addressing it like he hasn't quite made it there yet is a little bit disrespectful.
Yeah, he has a whole catalog. Yeah. You got Macadelic, you got songs.
Watching movies with the sound off. Divine Feminine, which is arguably his best work. You know, I would say Swimming, Circles, and Divine Feminine are probably the big three Mac Miller albums now. Even Faces. Faces is great too. Like you said, yeah. He's got a whole catalog. But it's melancholic, but it also, I feel like it gives you some hope too, which is like Mac Miller is something that's very, he's very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about death a lot, of course, like he does in all of his old music. So it is a little bit eerie. The intro track Circles, I won't lie, made me well up a little bit just hearing mm-hmm. him start with that. Well, this is what it looked like right before you fall. I was like, damn, man, yeah. Like, here we go. And it feels like he's speaking to you from beyond the grave. But then again, I think that's just because as an artist, he's always been the type to talk about death.
For sure.
So Circles is just a beautiful, beautiful album. Just a great, great snapshot of a great artist.
Did you like it more than us?
Swimming?
Yes.
I don't know if I'm ready to say yet. I don't know if I can make that distinction yet because I love them both. And I know that they're supposed to be companion albums.
Yeah.
But right off the rip, I think I'm liking Circles a lot.
Okay.
So I'm liking it a lot. So that's my album pick of the week.
I've given Circles roughly 1.5 listens. I listened to it on my flight back from my vacation, and I enjoyed it a lot, but I definitely need to go and listen to it more.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I would say Swimming is still, you know, my favorite of the two, but I think they're both great projects, and you can see how they are adjacent with each other.
Yeah,
you can
absolutely.
See the similarities. I think there's a lot more singing on Circles than there was Swimming. I think there was more of a balance of the rapping and singing on Swimming. This one, I'd say it's probably like 80% singing, it feels like, but that might be a stretch.
No, and that's a good point, too, where it's like I have such a hard time labeling it as like a hip-hop or a rap album. Because it sounds so much more like an indie album to me. Like, the instrumentals are raw and they're real. And like you said, he's doing a lot more singing on it. That there's a Twitter account. I think we both follow it, Hip Hop by the Numbers.
Yeah.
And they tweeted something. I don't remember the figures exactly, but it was something like 75 to 80% of his lyrics were sung on Circles. So definitely something new. And something I admire about Mac Miller, too, on this album is he's not a great singer, but he knows how to use his voice.
Yeah.
You know?
I would compare that to like a Tyler, the Creator.
Or like Kendrick.
Well.
Like, yeah, 100%. Neither of them have great voices, but they know how to use their voices and they do it well. So that was something that really stood out. But yeah, Circles has been on repeat for me lately. Can't see myself not listening to it again in the near future. Yeah. So
okay. So my album pick is Baby Keem. And the album, or that's the artist, the album is Die For My B.
Oh!
So I originally found this album scrolling through Twitter, looking at a lot of, in December, looking at a lot of people's, you know, end of the year list. And Yao from DJ Booth, he recommended the album and talked about, I think I saw someone else on Twitter talk about how it's like one of the craziest cover arts. And that's really what got me. When I first clicked on the album, I clicked on the cover art. It's Baby Keem being jumped.
Seen.
It's in black and white, being jumped by like three women like with their purses. And you see it?
Yes.
And so when you combine that with the title, Die For My Bitch, I was like, okay, I got to listen to this.
Oh, man.
And my first listen, Baby Keem gives me Ugly God vibes mixed with Playboy Cardi mixed with some Made in Tokyo, in terms of the fact he's got that infant-like voice that Playboy Cardi has really, I would say, revolutionized and made like a weapon in hip-hop. He's got that type of voice. He doesn't take himself too seriously like an Ugly God. So you got song titles like Orange Soda.
Orange Soda's gas.
Top Ramen. Buster Up. Like, it's titles that just, like, when you read them, like, you can't help but laugh without even listening to the track. But at the same time, it's like you still have to take Baby Keem seriously as an artist in terms of the sounds that he's putting out there. You know, he's got these trap tracks that are hard while he's still doing that infant voice. Tracks like Buster Up.
Orange Soda,
the intro track Stats, also another hard track. But he's also got these tracks that deviate from, I guess, what you would typically hear in trap. So you got songs like Honest, where it's a more slowed down track where Baby Keem kind of flexes his melodies while singing about not necessarily a relationship, but a situationship. In terms of, you know, we're not necessarily in love, but we're passing time together tonight. Right. One of those type tracks. But it's just, it's so good. And then if you watch the music video with it, it's the visuals are very impressive, very top notch. Another track is My Ex, where it's almost like it's got some indie rock, alternative rock type of guitars going on while he's just singing a ballad of why he hates his ex. It's really one of the most fun albums I've heard in a while.
Yeah.
I would compare it to a Die Lit type of vibe from Playboi Carti, where it's just, you know, the entire time you're just having fun. Lyrically, he's not going to challenge you. You're not sifting through the lyrics on Genius. It's very straightforward. And I'll admit there's some songs where the lyrics are so lazy where it's almost like that kind of didn't really make sense in terms of like this simile or metaphor isn't really clever.
Right.
But you can kind of overlook it because and the delivery of his voice and just how fun it is combined with the instrumentals. So that's why that's my pick. I definitely recommend you start with Orange Soda, followed by Honest, followed by Busser Up, if you don't want to listen to the whole project. Those three tracks, they kind of give you a good picture of who Baby Keem is. And if you like those, you'll probably like the rest of the project, too.
I got to peep that whole project. I remember you were playing songs the other night off of it, and I was like,
yeah, Busser Up,
damn.
Instrumental.
Yeah,
really
that instrumental
is tough.
So tough.
Very tough.
Oh, it was just gritty and dark, but... I mean, it sounds like... It just sounded like brain candy. Like, it was just like, just something for your ears, you know? So those were albums.
Yeah. What's your song pick?
So my song pick for the week. I never listen to UK rap. Mm-hmm. Never listen. I'm only for the sole reason that like, I feel like I haven't been put on to the right UK artists,
mm-hmm.
but, I watched a Fantano review this week for Stormzy, his album Heavy as the Head, which like, I guess came out in December, but I hadn't heard of it until today. And so while I do want to nominate the whole album, I'm just going to nominate one of the songs, which is the intro song, Big Michael.
Okay.
It's crazy. It's so hard. I was not expecting a UK rapper to come in with the type of flow that he comes in. And they got a different brand out there, and I love it. It's just, whether it's drill rap or whatever it is, it's just, it's so hard, man.
Yeah.
And some of the slang, like, geeks me, like Top Boy. Like, I don't know why I think Top Boy is so funny. But, like, any of the slang words, I find humorous, but it's a hard song. And I implore you listeners out there to listen to the whole album because it's crazy. And if you're not put on the UK rap like I was, I feel like this is a good place to start.
Okay. My next pick is from an artist named China. She's very... I'll label her as almost like a cemetery rapper in terms of like how dark her music is. The track is called Mood. It's off of her latest EP, which came out in 2019, In Case I Die First. So based on that title alone, you can kind of get the vibes. And in terms of the sound, I would compare it to Metro Boomin, Offset, and 21 Savage's Without Warning.
Okay.
But an even like darker vibe, to the point where like I would even say Without Warning looks sunny next to it. like the beat on Mood is this, you know, hollow trap instrumental that just... I can only describe it as cemetery music. Like it's just so like eerie. And then China's got lyrics like "Call me little corpse," that just give this almost like demonic vibe to her as an artist. Which I think some people won't enjoy that about her, but her mechanics are just so smooth that I still am head nodding the entire time when I'm thinking like, "Wow, this is some evil shit." She's rapping. But it's like the flows are just tough. So I definitely recommend checking China out. Just this very dark
what's
track.
What's the song called?
Mood.
Mood.
Mood is the name of the song. The project is In Case I Die First. It's a 4-song EP where all 4 songs are hard, but this one is the most cemetery-like. I don't know an adjective really to use here, so I'm just going to keep saying cemetery. It reminds you of death.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right.
But still very enjoyable. Check it out. I'll admit, it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to listen to music this dark, but it's very good.
If you're ever
opinion.
In that type of mood.
And the mechanics are definitely there.
Yeah.
So check it out.
Cool.
But let's move on to our discussion this week. Roddy Ricch. The pop music world into a frenzy. So I guess I'll kind of start with a little background information for those that haven't been following it. So to, you know, kick off the year, Roddy Ricch has just been tearing it up with his project, Please Excuse Me for Being Antisocial, and his hit track on the album, The Box, have been tearing up the Billboard charts to the point where Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber are begging.
Go crazy.
Begging.
Ah, go stupid.
Have been begging their fans on Instagram and on Twitter to stream their music.
Like, begging might be an understatement.
Yep. So Billboard reported that Selena Gomez's third album, Rare, debuted at number one. It did beat out Roddy Ricch by exactly 2,000 units. So she had 112,000 sales. Roddy Ricch had 110,000 sales.
Seems a little too perfect.
Yep. And it's funny because, like, there's on Selena Gomez's Instagram, like, there's, she even posted on her story one time of her and her friends, I guess, going, like, shopping to just every store that had her album and just to buy units. So you got to wonder, like, you know, how legit is that?
Yeah.
And then when it comes to Justin Bieber, he was, you know, trying to ensure that Yummy, his single was, his newest single, which in my opinion isn't the most enjoyable track.
Bro.
He wanted it to go number one. His first number one in 4 years. So to do that, he went on Instagram and pretty much begged his fans to play his music. Even so, for those that are out of the country that wouldn't qualify for streams for the Billboard number one, he asked them to download VPNs to essentially say that they're listening to it in America, as well as play it on repeat while they're sleeping. Like, how desperate do you need to be for a number one? When you are Justin Bieber, or a number one album, when you are Selena Gomez, against an artist that's relatively new.
Yeah.
So I guess...
brand new, bro.
Pretty much brand new. Like,
yeah.
Before this project, I think what really, you know, highlighted him was his feature on DJ Khaled's album. What's the name of that song? Was it Ballin'? I've been ballin'.
That sounds right.
That song.
If you know the name of the song, correct us.
But yeah, that track is really what put him on the map. You know, he's had music before that, obviously, but that's, you know, what put him on a lot of people's radars. So with this album being like his number one, or his debut album essentially, and it's, you know, being this successful, I think we got to talk about it.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
The first question I got to ask with all of this is politicking for streams a bad thing? Like, aren't you supposed to use your social media to promote? I guess I'll let you start, and then I'll go from there.
So I think it's just, to me, it's embarrassing. Like, what? Like, you're fishing for streams? Like,
yeah.
I feel like you should let the music speak for itself. And I think Justin Bieber going ahead and posting this detailed step-by-step on how to finesse this system, that's too much. And that shows me that he knows he made a trash song.
Yeah. I interpreted all of these actions by both Bieber and Selena Gomez as, like, maybe there's pressure from their labels.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make this a racial thing, but I got it. Where, you know, oh, there's this new black artist that's got a number one. Like, you guys have been in the industry for a decade now. Like, how are you using this hip-hop album that came out of nowhere? It feels like that type of thing where there's this pressure. Because, like, Selena Gomez is posting all these stories, like, where she's literally, like, monologuing in her bed about how, oh my god, this number one would mean so much to me. Like, this album means so much. Like, I need a number one. I don't think people think like that. I think if you really were, if this album meant that much to you, I don't think it's really about the number one.
Yeah.
So that's how I was feeling about it. But
that's a good point.
Back to the question at hand of, you know, is politicking for streams a bad thing? I want to say no, when it's done correctly, because, you know, artists like
that's a key distinction.
Artists like DaBaby, like, he uses social media like a genius.
I was gonna
really.
Say, dude,
like,
Lil
Nas X is a social media god.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like Lil Nas X is a pro, where he's got the memes down. Like, he is clearly an internet.
And he's self-aware. Like, he makes. Yeah. Dude, I remember when, like, Old Town Road was on that unbelievable run, and he was like making memes like, oh, like, me playing the music in, like, all these streaming factories or something like that. Like, he mastered that.
Where it's the self-awareness, and it's make a joke out of it. Don't embarrass yourself literally begging people to play
and
your,
like,
music.
Honestly, like, Old Town Road was a good song. Mm-hmm. Like, let's be real with ourselves. Like, that was actually a good song. Yummy sucks. Yummy is garbage.
Yeah.
I think Yummy might be the worst song to come out so far this year. And, like, it's
definitely
early.
Up there.
It's early.
And but I it also sucks. I want to clarify that I'm not a Justin Bieber hater. Like Justin
Neither
Bieber's
am I.
Album Purpose is
fire.
Fire. I haven't listened to it in some years, but in high school I was getting down to that. I was like, this album is tough.
That was hot. Purpose was hot.
And he took this hiatus, and I guess he expected the fans to just immediately stick with him, which they stuck with him to a point. If you're the number two single in the world, you're in America, you're doing something right. So it's not like he did anything wrong, but I guess he just expected this number one to be guaranteed. And the fact that he went and begged for it is just embarrassing to me.
Yeah, no, it is embarrassing. And I think it was tough, too, because Roddy, like, already had so much momentum with this album. Like, I feel like it was just accruing and accruing, and especially with The Box. Like, The Box is a huge song, even on, like, TikTok,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, The Box is, like, checked... No, I'm sorry to sound corny. Checked off all the boxes in terms of, like, how you know, good a song is. Like, it's good with snippets. It's good as a TikTok with, you know, the
that in itself is so memeable.
So many memes out of it. But the song as a whole is just so good. The melodies are so catchy that it's hard to really, to not like the track. And I... More than even just the song itself, I love Roddy Ricch's approach to all of this. And the terms of it's really, you can't tell if it's trolling or being
stream
a good
yummy.
Guy,
yeah.
where he's tweeting out "Stream Yummy," "Stream Selena Gomez's album," and I think that's genius because it makes him look like the good guy when everyone knows he's trolling and is gonna just continue to stream his music anyways. So I really like his approach to it. Does this moment mean something, like, historically, and the idea of up-and-coming hip-hop artist like Roddy Ricch surpassing Justin Bieber? Like, Justin Bieber isn't someone you sleep on, you know?
Yeah,
I mean?
He's
one of the biggest artists of the past decade.
I don't know about, like, historically, but, like, maybe we'll look back and this will be a moment where we're like, this is where it started. Because, obviously, it opened up this conversation.
Yeah.
Where, like, people have been gaming streaming numbers for a while. But I feel like it was so glaring with somebody like Justin Bieber. You know, that's like, bro, that's like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Like, she had that shit in the bag.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber should have had that in the bag. But guess what? He put out a garbage single and lost the number one spot.
Yeah.
It's the same shit.
I'm looking at this almost like in terms of like with, I guess, if there was a hip hop textbook and the idea of like looking at this 10 years from now.
Yeah.
That an up and coming artist like this could beat out the two of the biggest pop stars in the world with two of the biggest social
like
media
followings
in the
world. This isn't just America. This is the world.
And the idea that you can beat them out with, like, obviously he's got his label backing him and he's got, he's doing promotions. But the idea that you can do this relatively just off of how good the music is.
Yeah.
That says something, I guess, for hip hop and the idea of just how big it is. You know, last year it was announced that hip hop is officially the biggest genre in America. But, like, this really proves it right here that you can beat out pop music off of just having good music alone, not off, because this isn't off name value. He's not Future. He's not Young Thug.
Yeah.
He's not Drake. He hasn't been around for a decade. The idea that you can beat them out on the music alone is very impressive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think Roddy Ricch has, he's got years.
He's
his
got,
best years
yeah,
are ahead of him.
He's got huge upside. He's got a lot of potential. I think we're going to see some more great stuff from him.
Yep.
Because, I mean, I didn't listen to this album for a long time. And I'd been pressed by, like, my friends and stuff to listen to it. I was like, all right, finally, like, I'll listen to it. It was so good, dude.
Very good
album.
It
was so good. I was surprised at how good it was.
Very good album.
And maybe that's the difference. Maybe people, like, aren't just going to take the bullshit anymore and just be like, you know what? Like, this is actually good music. But I also can't help but feel like TikTok and, like, social media had a massive role in making the song as big as it was.
Yeah, I agree. I just think in general, though, streaming in a way has evened the playing field out.
I agree.
So I'm thinking of an artist like Chief Keef. In 2012, with his debut album, Finally Rich, he sold like 30,000 or 50,000 copies, I think, and it was considered a flop. And at the time, you know, streaming numbers weren't really a thing. So the way I look at it is now that where you have streaming instead of just album sales, different people are going to, you know, listen to music. And because, like, with Chief Keef, a lot of people would just listen to his stuff on YouTube. They wouldn't, you know, buy his album. But now today, with those numbers counting of, oh, I listened to this on Spotify, I listened to this on YouTube, all this, the streaming numbers, since they count that way, it evens out the playing field for
That's a good point.
Hip-hop artists versus pop artists, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The internet era, too, is just, that's been a huge influence for rappers especially. I mean, I feel like hip hop now, like especially came up. Goodbye. Just dropped my phone. Hip hop now especially isn't reliant on the internet, but it grew up with the internet.
Yeah.
You know? At least modern hip hop. And like even like clout rap. Like guys like Tekashi and Tekashi 6ix9ine. Yeah. When is he getting out? Like 2 years, something like that?
No, I don't know. I don't remember or care.
Whatever. Whatever. Anyways, the point being, like, it makes sense because these are guys that are growing up with the internet era of hip hop, and they're not riding the coattails of it, but maybe they're the pioneers of it, per se.
Well, they're definitely, I wouldn't say they're pioneers, because it's like the internet era has been around long enough. Like, Soulja Boy is like an internet era pioneer.
That's true. Chief Keef, even especially, God, yeah. Lil B, bro, yeah.
Like, those definitely are the ones I look at as, like, the pioneers, but now we're seeing, I guess, a golden age of hip-hop in the internet era in terms of, like, it's really the streaming era. Yeah. I don't even consider it the internet era, but I think it's thriving now based off of, you know, 10 years, and now, you know, we're kind of here at a point where it's really a monster. Everybody get up.
Ankle breaks. First ankle breaks of the new year. So we're just going to hit you with a quick state of the league address, which is we're basically just going to go over the current standings. And we're going to tell you who the all-star starters are, because that's pretty big news. The full all-star list, I believe, is going to be released on the 30th. So let's get to it. So the league standings, the Bucks and the Lakers are still at the head of both conferences. The Bucks have the best record in the league with 40-6, and the Lakers are 36-10 now, right? They lost last night, so so 36-10. So for the Eastern Conference, the Miami Heat still sitting in second place at 31-14, but the Raptors are right behind them with the same record of 31-14. My Boston Celtics sitting pretty in fourth place with 30-14. Pacers at 30-16. The Sixers 30-17. And the Magic sit in seventh at 21-25, and the Nets in eighth with 19-25. Of course, there's going to be a battle for that bottom spot in the Eastern Conference, a battle amongst the teams with under 500 records. We'll see who makes it in. Mm-hmm. Then for the West, the Jazz are in second place at 32-13. The Clippers right behind them at 32-14. And then the Nuggets sitting in fourth at 31-14. The Rockets behind them at 28-16. With Luka Doncic and the Mavericks being in sixth place at 28-17. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chris Paul and the Thunder sitting in seventh place at 28-19. And rookie of the year frontrunner Ja Morant and his Grizzlies are sitting in eighth place at 21-24.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the state of the league. All-star starters got announced earlier this week. So the captains are, of course, LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo. So from the West, we have LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Luka Doncic, and James Harden. On the Eastern side of things, we have Giannis, obviously, Joel Embiid, Pascal Siakam, Kemba Walker, and Trae Young. Those are the all-star starters. Shock Kemba Walker was there, honestly. But, you know, when it comes to the East, who else really is there at the guard position? I mean, there's Kyrie, but he hasn't really played the whole season. Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler. But even Jimmy Butler.
Ben Simmons.
Yeah, Ben Simmons. So interesting, but, I mean, I'm obviously not upset about it, being a Celtics fan.
Of course.
And then I feel like another big note is that Zion is back. He debuted on the 22nd, which was Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
He debuted against the Spurs, and he dropped 17 in the fourth quarter with four threes.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I watched the first half of that game, and I was like, you know, it's getting kind of late. Zion hasn't done anything. I got class at like 9 a.m. tomorrow. I'm gonna go to bed. What do? I wake up to find out Zion had 17 in the fourth quarter and was just splashing. Splashing. Wish I saw that. But it is what it is. He also had a crazy block on Friday night against the Spurs?
No.
The first game was against the Spurs.
Those against the Nuggets.
Yeah, against the Nuggets. He had a crazy block.
Sent him in the fourth row.
Yeah,
that was nuts.
Head was at the rim. So clearly he's back, and I'm definitely interested to watch the Pelicans a little bit more to see, you know.
They play Celtics tonight on ESPN. So tonight being Sunday the 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So check that out if you're interested. So that is the state of the league. Now we're going to get into the main segment of Ankle Breaks here. Y'all remember that famous Smash Mouth song? Hey now, you're an all-star. We're doing a little segment like that. We'll be going through some fringe all-star potentially all-star players and deciding who is and who isn't an all-star. So we got six groupings here. First, we're going to open it up with our rookie of the year frontrunner, Ja Morant, and veteran point guard, Chris Paul.
Yeah, this is an interesting
This
one.
Is really
in terms,
interesting.
In terms of numbers, their numbers are very similar. Mm-hmm. I think Ja averages 7.1 assists, so he averages about half assist more than Chris Paul, who has a career low in assists this year with 6.5. Chris Paul has more assists per more rebounds per game, and I think he's averaging around the same number of points. .2 less points. But if I had to pick, I'm going to go with Chris Paul, not just because he's the veteran here and you don't know how many All-Stars he's got left, but this is like a renaissance season for Chris Paul.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, no one thought
this
was coming.
He's coming back to life.
Everyone was really, you know, expecting this to be Chris Paul's last stop, and it's just going to – he's going to go out sad, and it's not going to be enjoyable. But the Thunder are competing mm-hmm. behind him, and obviously Shai I can't say his name.
Gilgeous-Alexander. Yes. Yeah, it's a mouthful.
It's a long name, yeah. Right? But behind those two, as well as, you know, a great supporting cast, they've been able to, you know, move up to the sixth seed in the West at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's
shocking. Actually, that's I commended. Thought the Thunder were going to be like so far out of the playoffs this year.
That's got to be commended.
Absolutely.
I also didn't expect the Grizzlies to be an eight seed, but. Mm-hmm. I think Ja Morant he's got plenty of years to grow as a player. He's gonna be in the rookie sophomore game, obviously. And he'll be an all-star in the future, but I would take Chris Paul right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you and also take Chris Paul. Because of longevity and I don't wanna say seniority, but like he has, like you said, he's had like a complete revamp of his career this season. Mm-hmm. It's been so much fun to watch because I was the guy last year slandering Chris Paul. Mostly because he was on my fantasy team, and that was incredibly frustrating to watch him put up like 12, 5, and 4 every game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's been a lot of fun to watch this year. The Thunder, in general, have been so much fun to watch this year. And I think him kind of accepting his role on the team has been a big part in that.
Yeah.
And it's been conducive to his career and the team's success, obviously. I mean, they're in the playoffs right now. And, like, right now I see them making it all the way Shai is playing, too. So, yeah, I'm going to take Chris Paul also in
Chris
this race.
Chris Paul, like, it's just his mentality. He clearly, he's not the type that's just going to lose games just because, oh, he's in a bad situation. He's been leading. He's been challenging the refs to do their jobs.
Yep.
If that means, you know, get them a couple wins, like the untucked jersey game, you know. So I got to give it to him in terms of just he's competing every night. And he's also more efficient than Ja, according to the numbers, in terms of PER and win mm-hmm. shares. So I'm going to give it to Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Next, we got D'Angelo Russell and Devin Booker. What do you think, Trevor?
So similar stats, kind of. Booker, though, I'm going to take Devin Booker easily. I mean,
these are both guys on some pretty ass teams.
Yeah.
We should also include that.
Yeah, so like the team winningness doesn't really, I feel like, factor in here because these are both bottom of the barrel teams right now. Mm-hmm. You know, D'Angelo Russell's doing his part. He's averaging 23.9 points per game, 3.6 rebounds, and 6.3 assists. Great stats from him. Great stats. I feel like he's still on the upswing, still carrying that momentum from last year. And that's definitely in part because Steph Curry isn't playing and Klay isn't playing. But,
definitely.
You know, I think that's a great thing for him because he's going to keep developing. And the Warriors are going to be reloaded next year. But I think I'm going to take Devin Booker. I mean, numbers don't lie. Like, he's averaging almost 27 points per game, 4 rebounds, 6.4 assists. He's just been a rock for the Suns, like, his whole career. His last 10 games, he's averaging 30 points. You know, he's just a scoring machine. Very just talented offensive player. I'm taking him. If I'm picking All-Stars, I'm going to take Devin Booker.
So, yeah, this could be – it could be his first appearance.
Yeah.
I'm also going to agree with you for mostly the same things, so I'm not going to waste time
waste the time
they're
explaining
both,
it.
They're
yeah.
both really good guards on bad teams, also mm-hmm. guards that don't really play defense, but that doesn't matter when you're playing on bad teams. At the end of the day, Devin Booker is scoring more. Yeah, he's got not a major uptick in efficiency, but he's still, you know, more efficient than D'Angelo Russell is this year. Beats him in win shares by a mile, so I'm gonna give it to Devin Booker. Keep it simple, but either way, these are both, you know, deserving All Stars on just bad teams.
Yep.
Next, we got a little more interesting one: Ben Simmons or Bradley Beal.
Man, This is good. This is a good one because they're two completely different players,
yep,
but play positionally, you know, the same position just at the one or two spot.
Yep.
I mean, Bradley Beal's scoring numbers are just absurd this year.
Yep.
And I mean, they kind of have to be because he's on the Wizards.
Right. And the Wizards have, at least at some point earlier in the season, they were the second best offense in the league.
Yeah.
I think they're still up there. I just don't know the exact number off the top of my head.
So Bradley Beal's averaging almost 28 points per game. He's at 27.8, shooting 31% from three and 45% from the field. So, you know, he is a volume shooter because he has to be. But, I mean, his offensive abilities this year have just been unmatched, I feel like, on that Wizards team. And, you know, Ben Simmons is just an all-around talent. He's going to come out and give you a triple-double when he feels like it. But there's also games where he'll score like 1 point and do nothing.
Yeah,
but lately he's been on a tear.
Yeah,
I think he's been peaking at the right time.
Beat out, they've kind of unlocked Simmons to his full potential in terms of, you know, he's got all the spacing with guys like Korkmaz out there with him.
Right.
And, you know, just an Al Horford as the center. So, like, last night when he eviscerated the Lakers, like, it was kind of embarrassing. Danny Green was just getting feasted on by Ben Simmons because he had no help.
Yeah.
Every drive, AD wasn't at the rim because he was guarding someone like Horford. So it was just, you know, limitless space. I'm going to go with Ben Simmons on this, just in the fact that he's played more games. He's on a winning team. Bradley Beal missed some games with injury.
Yeah.
This stretch right here, I think, has just shown what Ben Simmons' final product really can be. And it also answers the question that, you know, that's been a endless question really for like 2 years now of should him or Embiid be traded? One of them should be.
I totally agree. And I feel like him staying, not necessarily Embiid, but Simmons staying in Philly is really holding him back.
It doesn't matter. I think either one of them can stay, but I just don't think they can
be
there. They're
not
complementary franchise pieces.
Like you said, Simmons, while Embiid's been out, has just been an absolute monster. You know, like, as much as it pains me to throw my hat in for a Sixers player, I'm going to go with Ben Simmons, too, for basically the same reasons you listed. Even though I still feel like Bradley Beal could end up being an all-star, I don't think that's, you know, out of the question here. But, I mean, you're absolutely right about Ben Simmons with, you know, the winningness aspect of it. And I feel like he's peaking at the right time, especially when it comes to all-star voting for the fans and for the media. So, yeah, I'm going to go Ben Simmons as well. But next, interesting pairing here. Bam Adebayo and Domantas Sabonis.
Who are you going with? So I'm not going to sit here and lie. The Heat and the Pacers aren't necessarily my go-to teams. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an NBA hipster that just loves watching the Pacers. I'm not that type of guy. I do really enjoy Malcolm Brogdon and how he's played this year, and he's definitely going to be an all-star. And for that reason, I'm not going to say Sabonis is going to be an all-star. I don't think the Pacers have been good enough to have two all-stars.
Mm.
I just don't think he's at that level. While the Heat, they're the two seed in the East right now. And while Jimmy Butler has been great, if you take Bam off this team, it's a huge difference maker compared to if you take Jimmy Butler off this team. You know, they have a lot of good two guards and forwards that they can kind of plug in with their rookies, and obviously Jimmy Butler's their rock, but their rim protector and game changer is Bam. You take Bam off that team and they're not the same defense, they're not the same gritty team that they've been. So for that reason, I'm going to pick Bam.
Okay.
But what do you think, Trev?
Oh, man, it's so tough because, I mean, like you said, Bam is such, like, he's just such a complete center for this Heat team. And, like, he fits that piece. And I feel like like you were saying, he is part of this formula for success. But I feel like he's not even, like, at the forefront of it. Like, I still feel like even with Jimmy Butler on the team, like, you're not always thinking about Bam Adebayo. Like, I wasn't until very recently. Like, when we were making these matchups, I was like, Bam Adebayo would be a great player to go up against Domantas Sabonis. I mean, stats-wise, I mean, Domantas Sabonis has it in the bag, really. I mean, the dude gets a double-double, like, every night.
Yeah.
He's a double-double machine. Almost 18 points per game, 12.8 rebounds per game. You know, the assist side, if you're a center, doesn't really matter unless you're Nikola Jokic. But, you know, it's tough. I mean, in terms of success, the Heat have obviously been a lot better. But I think based on pure player ability, I might go with DeMontis Sabonis here. Okay. I might disagree with you, and I might go with DeMontis Sabonis.
As I said, I do not watch the Pacers, yeah. So I'm not going to sit here.
I mean, I have only watched him because he is on my fantasy team, yeah. But he has been a lot of fun to watch. He's just so relentless with rebounding. Yeah. He is just an amazing rebounder. Defensively, doesn't have that same prowess that Bam has, but he's such a complete offensive player, and he's such an essential piece for this Pacers team, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You know, and Bam is too, but at the end of the day, I'm going to go with DeMontis Sabonis.
Next, we got Nikola Jokic versus Karl Anthony Towns in the Western Conference.
Oof.
What's your pick, Trev?
Powerhouse matchup. Man, again, so tough because these are two completely different players. But I think off the rip, I'm going to go with Cat. I don't know. I mean, obviously, the Timberwolves have never had the success aspect of it. I mean, the Nuggets mm-hmm. are sitting, I think we said they're in third place in the West right now.
Yep.
So obviously the success is there. Nikola Jokic, actually, I'm going to change my answer. I'm going to go with Jokic because he is just such a more important piece to the Nuggets team okay. than Karl Anthony Towns is. Even though I think Towns is such an amazing offensive talent, Jokic, nobody is a playmaker as a big man like Jokic is. Like, yeah. I don't think anybody can run an offense through their team quite like the Nuggets can with Jokic. So I'm gonna flip-flop, yeah, and I'm going to go with Jokic.
I think the Nuggets are, compared to last year, they're kind of having a little bit of a down year in a way, just because they're not the three seed, which isn't bad, but I think last year they were the two or the one. And Jokic feels like he hasn't been, like, 100% of what he was last year.
Yeah.
But I will say Cat has missed an extended period of games yeah. from November to into December, and he just came back. And while he did have a crazy, you know, 30-something point game very recently, I'm going to still go with Jokic just on the fact of durability and the fact that he's played most yeah. of the games this season and his team is up there. But lastly,
I caught myself in the middle of talking. I was like, you know what? Like, every point I make about Jokic is just going to prove me why I should have just chose. Yeah.
I will say, if Cat played the full season, it's yeah. I would choose Cat, even though, you know, his team might be nowhere near relevant in the yeah. NBA. And just in terms of the numbers, the amount of threes he's putting up and making for a center is crazy. Like, I know Jokic's assist rate is crazy, but
yep.
Cat as a shooter is crazy. And how good crazy. Their offense yeah. was at the beginning of the season when he was, you know, healthy and they were they started off flourishing and everyone thought, oh, maybe they're going to actually win games this year. Maybe Wiggins is good. That all started with Cat as a spacer. So that's yeah. why I would have picked Cat if he played more games. But our last pick is Celtic v. Celtic.
I can't believe you're doing this to me.
Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum? Pick Trevor. I'm not even going to pick. You just have to pick and we're going to end the episode.
Man, see, I just want my guys to know before I make this decision that I love them both equally. And I am so thankful for their contribution this season. And I want Jaylen Brown to know that he has gone above and beyond what I thought he was going to do this year. He got paid, and he's showing us why he deserved to get paid. And I don't think he's reached the same highs Jason Tatum has hit quite yet. But he's getting there. So for that reason, I think I'm going to go with Jason Tatum. And I say that because Tatum's scoring this year is ridiculous. And he has had some bad shooting nights. There is no doubt about that. But he's broken his career high twice in one season. Got his first 40-point game this season. Shot the lights out against the Pelicans last time they played them. He's averaging 21.5 points per game, almost 7 rebounds, which has been such a major improvement to his game. Is his rebounding. We're like, last year he was getting rebounds, he was in the mix, but he is like tenacious this year going after boards. So I'm seeing a different kind of energy from him. I'm seeing an all-star energy. You know, both of these guys I believe can be all-stars, but I think Tatum has a little bit more pull to be an all-star than Jaylen Brown does.
Fair enough.
Right now. So that's my decision, Jason Tatum.
Sounds good to me. That's going to conclude our first episode of the season. And just like last semester, we're going to be going bi-weekly with the Transatlantic Soccer Podcast. So you guys will hear us in 2 weeks. We're pretty much going to be just recording on weekends now, whether it's a Friday, yeah. Saturday, or Sunday, and we'll be up on AmherstWire.com on Mondays. So be on the lookout for us. See you guys in two, or we won't see you, but you'll hear us in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Peace out.